watches I ride in this wind. On my good horse I call you my shiny black bears. To the playhouse of fortune to take the bright silver and gold you have taken.
You're tuned to WEOS Geneva, WXXE Fenner Syracuse, 88.1 Ithaca Community Radio, Free Radio Santa Cruz, KRFP Moscow, Free Radio Olympia, KQRP Salida, WGDR Plainfield, KWMD Kasilof Anchorage, WZKW Kingsville, KOWA Olympia, WRFN Nashville, WUOW Oneonta, KRBS Oroville, WKNH Keene, Radio Veronica US, WYQZ Warrenton Bealeton, KSOW Cottage Grove, or WMRW Warren. This week, on the 400th episode of Unwelcome Guests, I've assembled a collection of material that I hope you will find as thought-provoking as I did. I'm your host, Lynn Gary. In a recent program, author and broadcaster Tom Hartman asserted that the views of human nature held by liberals and conservatives explained their respective willingness to place their trust in government or corporations. He described the view that corporations were amoral because they were concerned solely with making profit. In my view, any human endeavor that is amoral is immoral. That is, it fails to address and be responsible for its impact on the well-being of what it comes in contact with. I know that many radical thinkers are uncomfortable with words like morality, evil. They associate these words with religion, with voyeuristic prudery, hypocrisy, and demagoguery. But these words are basic and powerful. They describe and engage heights and depths of human behavior and consciousness. If I knew of other words that carried the same passion behind them, I would use those. But I don't know of any. I've mentioned before on the show that I'm a lifelong atheist, having realized at the age of 7 that I didn't believe in a supreme being who created the universe and oversaw the fate of humanity. Nothing anyone has said, or which I have experienced since, has changed my mind, even at those times when I wished I could believe, if only not to cause the distress to others it seems that non-belief engenders. Living a lie, claiming to believe in order to conform, was and is a sin in my universe, as are the actions of people who demand a fake piety of others, lest our non-belief threaten the hegemony of their belief. And having experienced so much of that in this society, I was pleased to see a recent rash of authors and speakers asserting their non-belief boldly and publicly, and I've played some of those people on this show in the past. However, there's another aspect to the message this group of speakers that have been called the New Atheists has been putting forth that I find troubling, and that is the seeming elevation of reason above all. Reason is a powerful and important tool, and a double-edged one. When unalloyed with love, it can become the stuff of atrocities. We have certainly seen this in the area of science and technology. Some of the most serious problems we now face spring from the alienation of morality from the development and application of science and technology, from reducing the things in the world to materials, compounds, resources to be manipulated, to interesting problems to be solved, to the failure of technologists to be accountable for the uses to which their knowledge is put, to failing to consider the relationships with living and non-living things that make up the fabric of the biosphere. Again, I find myself falling back upon words like reverence, like sacred, words that come from religion, because the language of reason has not given us words to describe this relationship to the world, or if it has, I don't know them. The alliance of religion and the state has had monstrous outcomes, And so has the alliance of science and capital. Now in America, we seem to have an amalgam of science, religion, capital, and the state. When the elites desire to conquer, to subjugate, to torture, to control, they go to the Bible for their justification and the scientific literature for the means and methods. From the Inquisition to Abu Ghraib, religion claiming to uplift results in savagery and bloodshed. Science, in seeking to better our physical circumstances, has enabled the destruction of the beauty of the world that makes life worth living, at least to me. Both have been used to justify patriarchy and the dehumanization of women. Both have been used to justify hierarchy and the subjugation and exploitation of some by others. As an atheist, I find myself troubled by the secular humanists who tend to, like the religionists, set humans apart from and above the rest of nature. And therefore, also paradoxically, I find the person that has taken on these contradictions in a powerful way, who has put his finger on these things that discomfort me, and who walks between the battle lines of reason and belief, is a theist. He's Chris Hedges, a former war correspondent, seminarian, and now author and academic. This talk that you're about to hear for the first hour of the program was given in Houston, Texas in January, and comes to us thanks to Byron and the Progressive Forum at KPFT Pacifica Radio. Hedges is the author of four books, most recently his 2007 title, American Fascists. He's currently a fellow at Princeton University and the Nation Institute. I apologize in advance. Hedges, like so many others, uses the word anarchy as a synonym for chaos. Chaos is a situation of extreme confusion and disorder. Anarchy is a society organized without rulers, which many dictionary writers assume would produce a state of chaos. Here's Chris Hedges.
Thank you very much. I flew to Los Angeles from Philadelphia in May of 2007 to debate Sam Harris, the author of The End of Faith and Letter to a Christian Nation, in UCLA's cavernous Royce Hall. I debated Christopher Hitchens, who wrote God Is Not Great, 2 days later in San Francisco. The book that I wrote that will be out in March, and what is the genesis of this talk, is a product of these confrontations. I paid little attention until these two public debates to the positions of these new atheists. There are many people of great moral probity and courage who seek meaning outside of formal religious structures, who reject religious language and religious ritual and define themselves as atheists. There are also many religious figures that, in the name of one God or another, sanctify intolerance, repression, and violence. There is nothing intrinsically moral about being a believer or a non-believer. These atheists have found a following among people disgusted with the chauvinism, intolerance, anti-intellectualism, and self-righteousness of religious fundamentalists. I share this disgust. I wrote a book called American Fascists, The Christian Right, and the War on America. The Christian Right in the United States is the most frightening mass movement in American history. We dislike the same people, but we do not dislike them for the same reasons. And this is not a small difference. I was, as you heard, raised in a church where my father, a Presbyterian minister, spent his career speaking out, often at great personal cost, in support of the civil rights movement, the Vietnam anti-war movement, and the gay rights movement. The religious figures I knew and the ones I sought to emulate when I was a seminarian at Harvard Divinity School included Dr. Martin Luther King, Dorothy Day, the Reverend William Sloan Coffin, the Salvadoran Archbishop Oscar Romero, and Father Daniel Berrigan. It was possible to admire these men and women and what they stood for and hold in little regard institutional religion. It was possible to find in the Christian faith meaning and purpose while acknowledging the flaws in the Christian system and rejecting the morally indefensible passages in the Bible. The institutional church has often used its power and religious authority to sanctify cruelty and exclusion. The self-righteous smugness and suffocating piety of many religious leaders, along with the habit of speaking on behalf of people they never met, are characteristic of many liberal and conservative churches. The church often likes the poor, but doesn't like the smell of the poor. I graduated from seminary and decided largely because of my distaste for the hypocrisy of the church not to get ordained. I left the United States to report on the conflicts in Central America, eventually spending 2 decades as a foreign correspondent, most of them for the New York Times. I rarely go to church now, and when I do, often roll my eyes at the inanity of the sermons and the self-righteousness of many congregants who appear to believe that they are honorary sinners. I stole that line from Christopher Stendahl, my professor at Harvard Divinity School. That's all right. It's now footnoted. The liberal church, attacked by the atheists as an ineffectual, moderate religion, and by the fundamentalists as a nominal form of Christianity, is often, as their critics point out, a largely vapid and irrelevant force. It may not support the violent projects of apocalyptic killing championed by atheists such as Harris or Hitchens and these Christian radicals, but it also does not understand how the world works or the seduction of evil. The liberal church is largely a middle-class bourgeois phenomena filled with many people who have profited from industrialization, the American empire, and global capitalism. They often seem to think that if we can be nice and inclusive, everything will work out. They give a biblical twist to Dr. Pangloss's rosy vision in Voltaire's Candide, that we live in the best of all possible worlds. And if we have faith and trust in the forces around us, all is for the best. It is this naive belief in our goodness and decency, this inability to face the dark reality of human nature, our capacity for evil, and the morally neutral universe we inhabit, which is the most disturbing aspect of the belief systems of these atheists, Christian fundamentalists, and even many in the liberal church. There is nothing in human history or human nature to support the idea that we are morally advancing as a species or that we will overcome the flaws of human nature. We progress technologically and scientifically, but not morally. We use the newest instruments of technological and scientific progress to create more efficient forms of killing, repression, economic exploitation, and to accelerate environmental degradation. There is a good and a bad side to human progress. We are not moving towards a glorious utopia. We are not moving anywhere. But we live in an age of faith. We are assured we are advancing as a species towards a world that will be made perfect by reason, technology, science, or the second coming of Jesus Christ. Evil can be eradicated. War has been declared on nebulous forces or cultures that stand as impediments to progress. Religion, if you are secular, is blamed for genocide, injustice, persecution, backwardness, and intellectual and sexual repression. Secular humanism, if you are born again, is branded as a tool of Satan. The folly of humankind, however, is pervasive. It infects all human endeavors. It has not exempted itself from institutional religion or the cult of science and reason. The greatest danger that besets us does not come from Christian radicals or atheists. It comes from those who, under the guise of religion, science, or reason, imagine that we can free ourselves from the limitations of human nature and perfect the human species. Human individuals can make moral advances, as can human societies, but they also make moral reverses. Our personal and collective histories are not linear. We alternate between periods of light and periods of darkness. We move forward materially, but we do not move forward morally. The belief in collective moral advancement ignores the endemic flaws in human nature as well as the tragic reality of human history. This belief in inevitable moral progress, whether it comes in secular or religious form, is magical thinking. The secular version of this myth, as embodied by these atheists, peddles fables no less fantastic and no less delusional than those preached from some church pulpits. And the battle underway in America is not a battle between religion and science. It is a battle between religious and secular fundamentalists. It is a battle between two groups intoxicated with the utopian and magical belief that humankind can protect itself and master its destiny. These atheists embrace a belief system as intolerant, chauvinistic, and bigoted as that of religious fundamentalists. They propose a route to collective salvation and the moral advancement of the human species through science and reason. The utopian dream of a perfect society and a perfect human being, the idea that we are moving towards collective salvation, is one of the most dangerous legacies of the Christian faith and the Enlightenment. Those who believe in the possibility of this perfection often end by calling for the silencing or eradication of human beings who are impediments to this progress. They turn their particular good into a universal good. They are blind to their own corruption and capacity for evil. They soon commit evil, not for evil's sake, but to make a better world. The word utopia was coined by Thomas More in 1516 from two Greek words, no place. To be a utopian, to live for the creation of a fantastic and unreal world, was to live in no place, to remove oneself from reality. It is only by building an ethic based on reality, one that takes into the account the dangers and limits of human nature and human power, that we can begin to adjust our behavior to cope with social and political problems. All utopian schemes of impossible advances and glorious conclusions end in squalor and fanaticism. The current war on terror by the United States is a utopian vision. It is being fought so that evil can be violently uprooted. Its proponents promise a world that will become reasonable, a civil world ruled by the rational forces of global capitalism. And those who support the war on terror speak as if victory in any tangible sense is possible. The noble vision of a world in harmony is used to turn us into criminals, beasts, who carry out needless murder and torture in the name of human progress. The desire for emancipation, universal happiness, and prosperity has a seductive pull on the human imagination. It preoccupied the early church, which was infused with exclusivist utopian sects and only finally blunted by Augustine. We are comforted by the thought that we progress morally as a species. We want things to get better. We want to believe we are moving forward. This hope is more reassuring than reality. All the signs in our present world, however, point to a coming anarchy, a massive dislocation of populations that will result from ecological devastation and climate change, multiple pollutions, the weight of overpopulation, and wars fought over dwindling natural resources. Science, which should be used to address these looming disasters, has largely become a tool of corporations that seek not to protect us, but make a profit and stimulate the economy. New technologies that are potentially threatening, such as genetically modified organisms and nanotechnologies, are being unleashed with no understanding of the impact on the biosphere. The global population, which is expected to jump from 2 billion to 8 or 9 billion people in less than 150 years, means that if left unchecked, we will no longer be able to sustain ourselves, especially as nations such as China achieve the consumption levels of the industrialized nations in Europe and North America. Nearly two-thirds of the life support services provided to us by nature are already in precipitous decline worldwide. And the old wars of conquest, expansion, and exploitation will be replaced by wars fought for the basic necessities of air, food, sustainable living conditions, and water. And as we race towards this catastrophe, scientists continue to make discoveries, set these discoveries upon us, and walk away from the impact. The belief that science and reason will save us, however, makes it possible to ignore or minimize these catastrophes. We drift towards disaster with the comforting thought that the God of science will intervene on our behalf. It is dispiriting to live in a world where things do not move forward and will most probably get worse. We prefer to believe that we are the culmination of a process, the end result of centuries of human advancement, rather than creatures trapped in the irrevocable limitations and blunders of human nature. The idea of inevitable progress gives us comfort in times of turmoil. It allows us to place ourselves at the center of creation, to exalt ourselves above others. It translates our narrow self-interest into a universal good, but it is morally irresponsible. It permits us to avert our eyes from reality and place our hope in an absurdist faith. For every age, Joseph Conrad wrote, is fed on illusions. Least men should renounce life early and the human race come to an end. The belief that rational and quantifiable disciplines, such as science, can be used to perfect human society is no less absurd than a belief in magic, angels, and divine intervention. Scientific methods, part of the process of changing the material world, are nearly useless in the nebulous world of politics, ideas, values, art, and ethics. But the belief in the possibility of collective moral progress, in our ability to advance as a species spiritually and ethically, is seductive. And it is what has doomed populations in the past, who have chased after impossible dreams, and threatens to doom us again. It is, at its core, the enticement that we can be more than human, that we can become gods. We have nothing to fear from those who do not believe in God. We have much to fear from those who do not believe in sin. The concept of sin is a stark acknowledgement that we can never be omnipotent, that we are bound and limited by human flaws and self-interest. The concept of sin is a check on the utopian dreams of a perfect world. It prevents us from believing in our own perfectibility or the illusion that the human species makes moral advances along with the material advances made in science and technology. To turn away from God is harmless. Saints have been trying to do it for centuries. To turn away from sin is catastrophic. Religious fundamentalists who believe they know and can carry out the will of God disregard their severe human limitations. They act as if they are free from sin. And the secular utopians have also forgotten they are human. These two groups peddle absolutes. Those who do not see as they see, speak as they speak, and act as they act are worthy only of conversion or eradication. We discard the wisdom of sin at our peril. Sin reminds us that all human beings are flawed, though not equally flawed. Sin is the acceptance that there will never be a final victory over evil. Sin accepts that the struggle for morality is a battle that will always have to be fought. And sin is a reminder that the battle is not simply against falsehood, but the falsehood of our own particular truth. Studies in cognitive behavior illustrate the insight of this biblical concept. Human beings are frequently irrational. We are governed by unconscious forces, many of them self-destructive. This understanding of innate human corruptibility and human limitations, whether explained by Augustine or the psychologist Sigmund Freud, has been humankind's most potent check on utopian visions. It has forced human beings to confront their own myopia and irrationality, to accept that no act, even one defined as moral or virtuous, is free from the taint of self-interest. We are corrupted and bound by our animal natures. The question, as these atheists ask, is not whether God exists. It is whether we contemplate or are utterly indifferent to the transcendent, that which cannot be measured or quantified, that which lies beyond the reach of rational deduction. We all encounter these forces. They are love, beauty, alienation, loneliness, suffering, good, evil, and the reality of death. These unquantifiable forces in human life are the domain of art and religion. All cultures have struggled to give words to these mysteries and moments of transcendence. God, and different cultures have given God many names and many attributes, is that which works upon us and through us to find meaning and relevance in a morally neutral universe. Religion is our finite, flawed, and imperfect expression of the infinite. The experience of transcendence, the struggle to acknowledge the infinite, need not be attributed to an external being called God. The belief in a personal God can, in fact, be anti-religious. Religion is not about the pursuit of scientific or historical knowledge. It is about the human need for the sacred. God is, as Aquinas argues, the power that allows us to be ourselves. God is a search, a way to frame the questions. God is a call to reverence. And human beings come ingrained with this religious impulse. Buddhists speak of nirvana in words that are nearly identical to those employed by many monotheists to describe God. The impulse asks, what are we? Why are we here? What, if anything, are we supposed to do? What does it all mean? Science and reason, while they can illuminate these questions, can definitively answer none of them. This religious impulse exists in the atheist, as it does in the pious. It propels human beings to create myths and stories that explain who they are, where they came from, and their place in the cosmos. Myth is not a primitive scientific theory that can be discarded in an industrialized age. We all stoke and feed the fires of symbolic, mythic narratives about our nation, about ourselves, to give meaning, coherence, and purpose to our lives. When the myths we tell about ourselves endow us with divine power, when we believe that it is our role to shape and direct human destiny. We seek to become gods. We can do this in the name of Jesus Christ, Muhammad, or Western civilization. The result for those who defy us is the same: repression and often death. The failure to acknowledge human limitations and our irrevocable flaws crosses religious and secular lines. It has fed religious fundamentalists and a belief that technology, reason, and science will be our collective salvation. It is a failure to accept the limitations of being human. It is to forget the wisdom of sin. The language of science and reason is now being used by many atheists to express these ancient longings for human perfectibility. Reason and science, rather than religion, will regulate human conflicts and improve the world to bring about a paradise. This vision draws its inspiration from the Enlightenment, the European intellectual movement of the 17th and 18th centuries that taught that reason and scientific method could be applied to all aspects of human life. This process would lead to progress, human enlightenment, and a better world. René Descartes, David Hume, John Locke, Voltaire, Immanuel Kant, Denis Diderot, Jean-Jacques Rousseau, and Thomas Paine bequeathed to us this godless religion. The Enlightenment was a curse and a blessing. Its proponents championed human dignity and condemned tyranny, superstition, ignorance, and injustice. The Enlightenment led to the emancipation of the Jews in Western Europe, freeing them from squalid ghettos. French philosophers, including Voltaire, Rousseau, and Diderot, who influenced the ideologues of the French Revolution, called for emancipation and social and political justice. But there was a dark side to the Enlightenment. The philosophers of the Enlightenment insisted that the universe and human nature could be understood and controlled by the rational mind. They saw the universe as ruled exclusively by consistent laws, such as Newton's law of gravity or Galileo's law of falling bodies. These laws could be explained mathematically or scientifically. The human species elevated above animals because it possessed the capacity to reason, could break free from its animal nature, and through reason, understand themselves and the world. They could make wise and informed decisions for the betterment of humanity. The disparity between the rational person and the instinctive, irrational person, these philosophers argued, would be solved through education and knowledge. The Enlightenment empowered those who argued that superstition, blind instinct, and ignorance had to be eradicated. Those who could not be educated and reformed, radical Enlightenment thinkers began to argue, should be eliminated so they could no longer poison human society. The Jacobins who seized control during the French Revolution were the first in a long line of totalitarian monsters who justified murder by invoking pure Enlightenment ideals. Their radical experiment in human engineering ended with the Republic of Virtue and the Reign of Terror, which saw 17,000 people put to death. It was this belief in the moral superiority of Western civilization that allowed the British to wipe out the Tasmanian Aborigines. British hunting parties, who were given licenses to exterminate this inferior race, whom the colonial authorities said should be hunted down like wild beasts and destroyed. The British captured many in traps and burned or tortured them to death. And this same outlook led to the slaughter of the Caribs in the Caribbean, the Guanches of the Canary Islands, as well as Native Americans. It justified the slave trade that abducted 15 million Africans and killed even more. And it was this long tradition of colonial genocide in places like King Leopold's Congo which set the ground for the industrial killing of the Nazis and the man-made famines, show trials, and gulags of the Soviet Union. Reigns of terror are are the bastard children of the Enlightenment. Fascists and communists were bred on this vision of human perfectibility. And tens of millions of people have been murdered in the futile effort to reform human nature and build utopian societies. During these reigns of terror, science and reason served, as they continue to serve, interests devoted to the common good and the vast mechanisms of repression and mass killing. The belief that human nature can be improved and perfected, that we are moving throughout history towards a glorious culmination, is malformed theology. It permits wild, eschatological visions to be built under religious or secular banners. It is this belief that is dangerous, and it colors the thought of the crop of new atheists. They will tell us what is right and wrong, not in the eyes of God, but according to the purity of the rational mind. They too seek to destroy those who do not conform to their vision. They too wrap their intolerance in Enlightenment virtues. Some propositions are so dangerous that it may even be ethical to kill people for believing them, Sam Harris writes in The End of Faith. This may seem an extraordinary claim, but it merely enunciates an ordinary fact about the world in which we live. Certain beliefs place their adherents beyond the reach of every peaceful means of persuasion, while inspiring them to commit acts of extraordinary violence against others. There is, in fact, no talking to some people. If they cannot be captured, and they often cannot, otherwise tolerant people may be justified in killing them in self-defense. This is what the United States attempted in Afghanistan, and it is what we and other Western powers are bound to attempt, at even greater cost to ourselves and to innocents abroad elsewhere in the Muslim world. We will continue to spill blood in what is, at bottom, a war of ideas. Any form of knowledge that claims to be absolute ceases to be knowledge. It is a form of faith. And Harris mistakes a tiny subset of criminals and terrorists for 1 billion Muslims. He justifies the unjustifiable in the name of civilization, calling later in his book for us to consider a nuclear first strike on the Arab world and defending torture. The passions of these atheists hidden under the jargon of reason and science are as bankrupt as the passions of Christian and Islamic fundamentalists who sanctify mass slaughter in the name of their utopia. Religious fundamentalists pervert and distort religion to serve their own fears and self-aggrandizement. Atheists, such as Harris, do the same with science and religion. These two groups tell us we can conquer human nature, overcome our imperfections, and build, usually through violence, the perfect society. The confusing of moral progress with material progress is a persistent and dangerous myth. It permits us to believe that we have discovered a way out of the human predicament. It places a blind faith in an empowered elite to guide us towards this new world. Science, however, increases our capacity to inflict death and destruction, as well as protect life and permit virtue. Imperialism, communism, fascism, religious fundamentalism, and these atheists preach collective moral progress through exploitation, repression, and violence. They are all utopian, and they all seek to use science and technology in the service of war and profit to kill human beings on a scale unseen in human history. The Enlightenment vision, because it celebrates reason and science as a final good, is morally bankrupt. It allows us to divide the human species into superior and inferior breeds. It equates industrial wealth and power with moral progress. It sanctifies inhumane abuse of the weak to push the human race forward. And this corruption was built into the Enlightenment from its inception. Kant, in his lecture on anthropology, published in 1798, asserted that Africans are inherently predisposed to slavery. It is the Enlightenment which gave the world the scientific racism adopted as an ideological veneer for murder by the Nazis. The Enlightenment ideal of a perfect human being and a society ruled by scientific rationalism, while it informed an admirable humanism, also led others to carry out genocide and totalitarian repression. Those who believe in collective moral progress define this progress by their own narrow historical, cultural, linguistic, and social experience. They see others as equal only when the other is identical to themselves. They project their own values on the rest of the human race. Those who are different do not need to be investigated, understood, or tolerated, for they are intellectually and morally inferior. They are unable to accept human difference. Those who are different are imperfect versions of themselves. These secular and religious fundamentalists are blind egocentrics. They confuse their particular values with universal values. They confuse themselves with the universe. And these secular utopians, like Christian fundamentalists, are stunted products of a self-satisfied, materialistic middle class. They seek in their philosophical systems a moral justification for their own comfort, self-absorption, and power. They do not question the imperial projects of the nation, globalization, or the vast disparities in wealth and security between themselves as members of the world's industrialized elite and the rest of the planet. Philosophy, like theology, is often in the service of self-preservation and power, and this creed is no exception. The jargon of these atheists is different from the religious fundamentalists they attack, but because they share their naive belief in utopia, they are as intellectually rigid, dogmatic, and intolerant as these religious bigots. They condemn all who do not subscribe to their vision and call, like religious fanatics, for their physical annihilation. Most of these atheists, like the Christian fundamentalists, support the imperialist projects and preemptive wars of the United States as a necessity in the battle against terrorism and irrational religion. They divide the world into superior and inferior races, those who are enlightened by reason and knowledge, and those who are governed by dangerous religious beliefs. Harris and Hitchens describe the Muslim world, where I spent 7 years, most of them as the Middle East bureau chief for the New York Times, in language that is as racist, crude, and intolerant as that used by Pat Robertson or the late Jerry Falwell. They are a secular version of the religious right, and they misuse Darwin and evolutionary biology just as Christian fundamentalists misuse the Bible. Arguing that we can rise above our animal natures, a dream Darwin never corrupted his science to support. They are anti-intellectual, and while the atheists do not have much power and are not a threat to the democratic state, they engage in the same chauvinism and call for the same violent utopianism of the radical Christian right. They sell this under secular banners, but it does not excuse it. They believe, like the Christian right, that we are moving forward to a paradise, a state of human perfection made possible this time by science and reason. They argue, like these Christian radicals, that some human beings, maybe many human beings, have to be eradicated to achieve this better world. They see only one truth, their truth, and human beings must become like them, think like them, adopt their values, which they insist are universal, or be banished from civilized society. All other values, which they never investigate or examine, are dismissed as inferior. The atheists and Christian radicals have built squalid little belief systems that are in the service of themselves and their own power. They urge us forward into a non-reality-based world, one where force and violence, where self-exaltation and blind nationalism are an unquestioned good. They seek to make us afraid of what we do not know or understand, and they use this fear to justify cruelty and war. They ask us to kneel before little idols that look and act like them, telling us that one day, if we trust enough in God or reason, we will have everything we desire. Those who teach that religion is evil and that science and reason will save us are as deluded as those who believe that Jesus Christ intervenes on a daily basis on behalf of believers. Education and knowledge will not save us. Those who do not accept human limitations, who believe they have all the answers, who promise collective salvation, always turn education into a system of indoctrination. They seek, through education, to make us conform. Evil cannot be eradicated through education. Evil will always be with us. Science and human reason, like institutional religion, have delivered as much suffering as comfort to humankind. And the victims of the Nazi death camps, those killed at Hiroshima, the tens of millions who died in the Soviet gulags, or the millions of innocents maimed and killed in Vietnam, Angola, Sierra Leone, Afghanistan, or Iraq, and a host of other wars, know the awful truth. The fault, dear Brutus, is not in our stars, but in ourselves. There are scientists in the United States, a huge proportion of whom work for defense-related industries, constructing sophisticated weapon systems that have the capacity to exterminate tens of thousands and even millions of people. Is this a rational enterprise? Is it beneficial to humankind? Is it a reason for us to place our faith for the future of the human race in science? We carry on a never-ending struggle with the evil that I would not do, as Paul wrote. It is this capacity for remorse and self-reflection that saves us. The struggles for survival, the interplay between prey and predator, does not appear to engender feelings of guilt or remorse among animals. But as human beings, we can imagine and empathize with the plight of others, even with those we kill. It is this remorse, this capacity for empathy, which plagues many who return from combat. The knowledge that we have the capacity to impose indignities on other human beings is the essence of human dignity. Non sum dignus. When we lose this capacity for empathy, when we see the other only as a projection of ourselves, someone who either shares our values or must be educated to embrace our values, we slip swiftly back into the world of animals. The call to live the moral life, which includes the isolation and anxiety which often accompanies moral responsibility, is built on the capacity for empathy. Immanuel Kant founded his ethics upon this concept, and Kant's injunction always to recognize that human individuals are ends and do not use them as mere means runs in a direct line from the empathy championed by Jesus in the Gospels. The battle underway in the United States is not between religion and science. It is a battle against those who promise fantastic utopias and collective salvation. These utopias have turned away from human complexity and real intellectual inquiry. They urge us towards a disastrous blindness. And the blustering tele-evangelists and the atheists who ran about the evils of religion are little more than carnival barkers. They are in show business. And those in show business know that complexity does not sell. They speak in the impoverished language of television. They trade cliches and insults like cartoon characters. They don masks. One wears the mask of religion, the other wears the mask of science. They banter back and forth in predictable sound bites. They promise, like all advertisers, simple and seductive dreams. This debate engages two bizarre subsets who are well suited to the television culture because of the crudeness of their arguments. One distorts the scientific theory of evolution to explain the behavior and rules for complex social, economic, and political systems. The other insists the six-day story of creation in Genesis is fact. These antagonists each claim to have discovered an absolute truth. They trade absurdity for absurdity. They show that the danger is not religion or science. The danger is the fundamentalist mindset itself. The story of the fall in the Garden of Eden is a warning about the danger posed by a blind faith in the power of human knowledge. The figure who delivers knowledge to Adam and Eve is the source of evil, Satan. Knowledge brings with it benefits, including self-awareness and power, but it also tempts us to play God. To act on this temptation, to worship our own capacities, lures us into utopian projects. And the biblical story of the fall conveys fundamental truths about freedom, guilt, our relation to nature, and mortality. Those who formulated religious myths imparted an important spiritual truth rather than an historical or scientific fact. Those who wrote the Greek myths, the Vedas, the Upanishads, as well as the Bible, were trying to explain human beings to human beings. And those who argue that religion is the product of a time of intellectual darkness ask us to forget the wisdom of the past so we can have the things we desire. We must reject simplistic utopian visions. We must accept the severe limitations of being human. We must face reality, a reality which in the coming decades is going to be bleak and difficult. Those who are blinded by utopian visions inevitably turn to force to make their impossible dreams and their noble ideals real. They believe the ends, no matter how barbaric, justify the means. Utopian ideologues, armed with the technology and mechanisms of industrial slaughter, have killed tens of millions of people over the last century. They ask us to inflict suffering and death in the name of virtue and truth. And the atheists in the end offer us a new version of an old and dangerous faith. It is one we have seen before, and it is one we must fight. Nothing worth doing is completed in our lifetime. Therefore, we are saved by hope, Reinhold Niebuhr wrote. Nothing true or beautiful or good makes complete sense in any immediate context of history. Therefore, we are saved by faith. Nothing we do, however virtuous, can be accomplished alone. Therefore, we are saved by love. No virtuous act is quite as virtuous from the standpoint of our friend or foe as from our own. Therefore, we are saved by the final form of love, which is forgiveness. Religious thought is a guide to morality. It points humans towards inquiry. It seeks to unfetter the mind from prejudices that blunt self-reflection and self-criticism. We are all flawed. Human ambitions and pursuits, as the author of Ecclesiastes knew, are vanity. And the ancient Greeks held in high esteem the command they believed came from Apollo: know thyself. To know ourselves is to accept our limitations and imperfections. It is to reject absolutism. Ideas are not coded information transmitted like DNA. They are fragile and need to be nurtured and protected. We are bound to this earth by our common urges and instincts, our capacity to be moral and immoral. It is when we face the intractable, dual nature of our being that we begin to build a viable system of ethics. Utopian dreamers lifting up impossible ideals plunge us into depravity and violence. It is those who are broken, those who see the shifting sands and incoherence of their inner lives, as well as the fictive narratives we all hide behind, who can save us. They speak to our common humanity. They appeal to our humility. They talk not of power, but the transcendent. And in their words, we see the limits of reason and the possibilities of religion. Thank you.
You've been listening to a talk by journalist and author Chris Hedges given in Houston, Texas in January 2008. This is Unwelcome Guests, and you're tuned to WEOS Geneva, WXXE Fenner Syracuse, 88.1 Ithaca Community Radio, Free Radio Santa Cruz, KRFP Moscow, Free Radio Olympia, KQRP Salida, WGDR Plainfield, KWMD Kasilof Anchorage, WZKW Kingsville, KOWA Olympia, WRFN Nashville, WUOW Oneonta, KRBS Oroville, WKNH Keene, Radio Veronica US, WYQZ Warrenton Bealeton, KSOW Cottage Grove, or WMRW Warren.
Those polar bears now, who really cares now? They're breeding gender-bending babies who won't be breeding none, 'cause PCBs, yeah, are in the seas, yeah. We like to think that there's a little piece of us in everyone, 'cause we're Monsanto. That's right, Monsanto. We're turning Satan into Santa by giving kiddies cancer coming through now. Mother Nature Terminators of food and health and hope. That DDT ban, don't lay it on me, man, 'cause we had all these creepy crawlies falling on the food we grew. Was a revolutionary solution. It's just a shame that what we sprayed on made the turnips toxic too. Let me remind you about Indochina. Them commie dominoes were falling, so they sprayed them into hell. Get peasant farmers
orange pajamas.
We made their cover with her, then we withered them as well. 'Cause we're Monsanto. That's right, Monsanto. We're turning Satan into Santa by giving kiddies cancer.
Coming through now, we're changing you now.
The Mother Nature Terminators of food and health and hope. It's not our fault there's chemical warfare,
but if there's dollars in dioxin,
it's our duty to supply that grain of poison. They washed our boys in a cancer agent from the CIA. Hey, I cannot tell a lie. From Pentagon came that drug aspartame. Our Pepsi Cola with no calories was every kiddie's treat. When there were rumors,
it gave them tumors.
Somebody falsified the data, and we called it NutraSweet. And you get more juice now from a dairy moo cow. Monsanto's daily dose of hormones, that udder's gonna swell.
You'll bring the cream though, if you're in chemo.
There may be BST mastectomies, but nobody can tell, 'cause we're Monsanto. That's right, Monsanto. We're turning Satan into Santa by giving kiddies cancer. Coming through now,
we're changing you now.
The Mother Nature Terminators of food and health and home. Robert Shapiro, well, he's our hero. He's on a mission with a vision of sustainability, which means we're going to keep on growing. So we're the biggest corporation in the 21st century. In the future, for the big polluters, Eastman and eco-friendly line and redesigning DNA, genetic eyes on that far horizon, where everything alive is privatized and every seed will pay. We got the soya, we got the lawyers, the politicians in our pockets, all the way to president. To press on TV, to guarantee the cooperation of your nation in our new experiment. You did not choose it, but you'll have to use it. We'll get our Roundup Ready fingerprint in every pie you eat with every blatant. Be a bit more blatant. Tell the corporation's domination of your global be complete. Mr. Monsanto, Monster Mutanto,
we're turning Satan into Santa.
Give everybody cancer coming through now.
We're changing you now.
The Mother Nature Terminators, hell on earth creators, gene manipulators, biotech dictators. The future's gonna hate us.
Food and health and hope.